Welcome to Friend of Maryland. My name is Kat Pause, and this is a fat-friendly space. Today on Friend of Maryland, I share the full story from the New Zealand Women's Day about my fat activism. I chat with Kristen Rodier about naturalists and obesity, and I spotlight a blog from Dances with Fat. Maryland has a blog, a Facebook page, a Tumblr, and an email address, friendofmaryland@aol.com. But with all of those opportunities to interact, very few people actually do. I did get an email, though, recently from a listener who was excited to hear what the story in the Woman's Day magazine was and disappointed that I only shared the first few sentences on the show. So since this listener is outside of New Zealand, hi, Toya! I thought I would go ahead and actually share the entire article with my listeners on the show. So again, this was an article called Big and Proud, You Can Call Me Fat. And it was in the New Zealand Woman's Day magazine, the March 12th, 2012 episode. So here is the story. Down with fat phobia, says this large and fabulous academic. When meeting 135 kg Kat Pause, don't be afraid to state the obvious. Yes, she's fat, and she has no problem shouting it from the rooftops. I had to come out as a fat person, says the Palmerston North woman, 32. It was about embracing that word and having a sense of pride. There's nothing wrong with me. I can be fat and fabulous at the same time. With media focusing on body image and countless negative reports about obesity, Kat is the voice of resistance. She's one of a handful of fat activists in this country, dispelling the myths associated with weight and health. When I said I was fat to others, they would say, no, no, you're not fat at all, she says. But I think what they were really trying to say is that I'm not unattractive or lazy or unhealthy or all of those bad connotations that go with the word. For me, it's about promoting the idea that fat people have the same rights and dignity as non-fat people. Hey, I'm healthy. Kat, who has a PhD in human development, spreads her message on her weekly radio show in the Manawatu. Her blog, Friend of Maryland, and in the many academic papers she writes as a lecturer at Massey University. I've always been fat, she says. And during my childhood and adolescence, when a lot of people are not feeling positive about their bodies, I was comfortable in my own skin. She has regular medical checkups, exercises, and is healthy, and says people shouldn't judge and make assumptions about her and other fat people just by looking at them. Kat's recent appearance on TV2's 2020 sparked debate on radio talkback and the internet about her crusade to dispel the negative attitudes people have about fat people. Even though she isn't entirely happy about being in the public eye, Kat says she is willing to put herself out there to promote her positive message. It's not a comfortable place for me to be, but someone has to do it. There are important things to be said and issues to be raised. If I'm going to be that voice, then I'll do my best and hopefully change the world. She says men and women should be more comfortable with their bodies, no matter what size they are, and anyone who wants to embrace their body should get rid of the scales and install a full-length mirror by the shower. Living in a fatphobic culture is bad for people of all sizes, especially when someone is making unhealthy choices because they don't want to get fat. I have a friend who smokes and doesn't want to quit because she's scared of putting on weight. Seemingly brimming with confidence, Kat has days when she feels down about her image. There are moments of uncertainty, moments of doubt. There are days when I get up and for whatever reason, I don't like my body that day. But being a fat activist, I have to be committed to working through those issues and trying to make a difference. So that's the story that ran in the Woman's Day. If you'd like your own copy of the magazine, send me out an email to friendofmaryland@aol.com. The first three people, I'll mail their very own copy. Everyone else, I can send you a scanned PDF of the article. Oh. me today is Kristen Rodier, a doctoral candidate in the Department of Philosophy at the University of Alberta, Canada. Kristen, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure.
So regular listeners will know that I spotlit a piece that you wrote about obesity and naturalness in an earlier show. So I was super excited when you agreed to come on. Can you, for people who didn't hear that or who haven't read that piece, what is it, what kind of work are you doing?
Well, the blog post itself is about the sort of mutual definition or the conceptual interplay between obesity and naturalness, and sort of sometimes what underwrites a lot of the writing about obesity is that it is itself unnatural. And so I sort of wanted to explore that.
So when you explore whether or not obesity is natural, like how do you define, how do we unpack that term itself of being natural?
Well, that's just it, right? So nature and naturalness is often defined, in my opinion, by people in power,
yeah.
Whether they're medical power.
As most things are, right?
Power,
yeah.
Right? But it can mean a number of different things. So that's kind of what I'm interested in is.
So what are some of the different things it can mean or different ways it can be defined?
Yeah, so one can be that that nature is somehow beyond human intervention, right? Like you think about the the Everglades that no human has ever been to or something, and that's just pure nature, right? And so that defines nature against the human, right? But we're animals too, right? We're natural. And another definition would be sort of statistically occurring, right? So for a good example here is intersex. People say, "Oh, it's unnatural that a person not be clearly one sex or the other."
Mm.
But it's perfectly natural because it occurs, you know, sometimes some studies say 1 in 1,000, sometimes more. So that's natural, right? And then sort of the last one and the one that I'm interested in is the idea that we have a sort of natural purpose or function that the body is supposed to fulfill.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And there's a really, really good article on sex and nature, because natural function tends to be used in discourses around sex. So Martha Nussbaum has this article where she talks about how can you say that the lips have one function, right? We use them for eating, for speaking, for kissing, for all these other kinds of functions. But to say, no, it's only for this one thing, is a kind of move of power. And I think the idea that the natural body has to be a thin body, right, that the way to use our body correctly is to make it thin, is another one of these kind of same modes of control.
So the idea is that if, yeah, so this idea that a natural, like the natural state of our bodies, some would argue,
yeah,
is only a very limited range of,
yeah,
what a natural state of a body should be. So anyone that falls outside of that, and that would be fat people, is considered a natural? Is that the idea?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, or at least that we're using it not according to nature.
Okay. So it's
nature,
an unnatural state. Right. Being fat is an unnatural state.
Yeah, which is so puzzling to me, that sort of putting, having fat deposits on the body would somehow be considered a misuse of a natural body that pre-existed that fat body and then was somehow corrupted.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I like that. Well, and I think,
right,
that there's a
like
lot
that
of different
same person,
yeah,
inside of us, they're natural, right?
Yeah.
But what's happened on top is, you know, that's the unnatural part.
Well, and I think you, I mean, using that word corrupted, like I think actually really speaks volume to a lot of the different kinds of work that fat study scholars are doing in terms of the idea of the fat body as unnatural or the fat body as a corrupted body.
Yeah.
And it does. It goes back to unpacking who gets to define what is natural, what is corrupted. I was recently sharing with some of my students this kind of recent surgence of articles being published in journals about the obesity paradox. So we're seeing just a flood. And I'm actually writing my own article in response about, you know, all these studies that find these fat people are just as, if not healthier than these non-fat people. Yeah. And so they're able to publish it and explain it away by, oh, it's this obesity paradox. But what I try to explain to my students is that it's only a paradox if you first start with the assumption that being fat is unhealthy. If you don't start with that assumption, it's not crazy.
Obesity and the Limits of Shame, and that's very much the same paradox.
Yeah.
And it really only is a paradox if you define, if you have this kind of naturalized theory that all bodies respond certain ways to certain environments, and if they don't, then that's a paradox. Right?
Yeah. And of course, we've seen that all throughout scientific history. You know, so whether it was the fact that, you know, for a long time, you know, anytime a woman was different from a man, it was labeled as deviant or, you know, not the right way because all of our research was based on, you know, white, middle-class, heterosexual men. So it's interesting.
And as a philosopher, it really irks me because a paradox is something like, this sentence is false.
Yeah.
Right? A paradox is not... We have contrary evidence to our scientific hypothesis. That's not a paradox.
Well, but to these people, it is because they've built their entire careers on the idea that being fat is unhealthy. And so to suggest or to find evidence to the contrary, for them, it really does puzzle them in the same way that, this sentence is false, might puzzle someone interested in logic.
I know. So, no, I find that very, very interesting. We have this, like, so I'm just going to draw a connection here between naturalness and sort of the moralization of obesity.
Yes.
Because a lot of sort of moral and religious codes are connected back to this theory of divine or natural law. It's also called divine command theory, but it depends on what you think divine command is. Anyway, natural law. So that's the idea that it's morally good to accord with your natural purpose.
Right.
Right? And so if obese people are... abusing their bodies, right, and making them unnatural, then of course that's going to be perceived as a moral failure.
Right.
And so the move from natural to moral is so quick, right? Look at homosexuality, it gets called unnatural, right? It's the same kind of moralization.
Yeah, poor Kirk Cameron, he's definitely feeling the backlash about that naturalness now, isn't he?
Yeah. So it's really, really puzzling. And so whenever I hear naturalness, my ears sort of perk up.
So the work that you're doing, I mean, obviously you could spend years just trying to kind of unpack all of these various ways that we understand essentialism and what's natural and what's not and all of these kinds of things. Do you have kind of an end goal in mind or like what you're hoping to find or hoping to prove or, you know, hoping to kind of bring out in your work?
Well, it's always difficult to talk about your dissertation because it's always so big, but this is just sort of one point that I actually didn't get to make in my dissertation.
Oh, okay.
There's so many things we have to kind of pull out, but my chapter that's on fat is about temporality. And obesity.
Uh-huh.
So a lot about this scaring, the use of the word crisis, right?
Yes.
Crisis implies the future, when this dystopic future where everyone is obese and the healthcare system crashes. And so I'm kind of looking at temporality. So like in the past, we knew how to eat.
Yeah.
And we didn't have corrupted appetites. And so I'm kind of looking at past, present, future sort of cultural symbolisms and how that's experienced. So it's pretty wide.
Now that sounds amazing. when you're finished, I'd love to read your work. I'd love to read your dissertation. I'm a nerd, so you know, I enjoy doing those kinds of things. Well, listen,
cool.
Kristen, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
You're welcome.
We haven't had someone come on, you know, and kind of talk about these kinds of things before. And you're definitely the first identified philosopher I've had on the show. So this was a lot of fun for me.
Oh, good.
Well, best of luck with your dissertation, and I'll look forward to seeing it when it's finished.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
In the spotlight today is a piece from the blog Dances with Fat. Dances with Fat is written by one of my favorite activists, Regan Chastain. This piece was published on March 1st, 2012, and is titled, I'm Not Suffering from Obesity. Quote, I see people talk a lot about how we need to do something because so many people are suffering from obesity. I won't presume to speak for everyone, but I will say that while I've sometimes do suffer because I'm obese, I've never suffered from obesity. I'm suffering from living in a society where I'm shamed, stigmatized, and humiliated because of the way I look, where I'm oppressed by people who choose to believe that I could be thin if I tried, even though there's no evidence for that, and that I should try to be thin because that's what they want me to do, as if personal responsibility means that I'm personally responsible for doing what they think I should do and looking like they think I should look, even though it's none of their business. I'm suffering from doctors who have bought into a weight equals health paradigm so deeply that they are incapable of giving me appropriate evidence-based health care. I'm not just talking about diagnosing me as fat and giving me a treatment plan of weight loss, which is using a completely unreliable diagnostic and then prescribing a treatment that has the opposite result 95% of the time. I'm also talking about the two doctors who tried to prescribe me blood pressure medication without taking my blood pressure, or looking at my chart to see that it is always around 117 over 70, which means that taking blood pressure medication would have been extremely dangerous. I'm talking about a doctor trying to get me to lose weight to treat me for type 2 diabetes when I actually had anemia. I'm talking about a doctor telling me that my strep throat was due to my weight. I'm talking about people who are supposed to be scientists abandoning science and research in a way that strongly resembles the time when the Catholic Church told Galileo to sit down and shut up. I'm suffering from a societal witch hunt where instead of putting me in a river, they put me on a scale. People look at my body and feel comfortable blaming me for everything, from global warming to healthcare costs, despite a lack of evidence for either. People send me crazy hate mail, saying nasty things to me at the gym, although making fun of a fat person at the gym is something I will never understand. People who are drenched in thin privilege try to use that position of privilege to make me feel bad about myself. I'm suffering from the misinformation campaign that is led by the diet industry, weight loss pharmaceutical industry, and surgeons who profit from mutilating people who look like me, none of whom are willing to be honest about the risks or horrible success rates of their interventions long term, and some of whom just don't seem to care. I am suffering from living in a society that tells me that the cure for social stigma, shame, humiliation, and incompetent healthcare is for me to lose weight, when the truth is that the cure for social stigma is ending social stigma. What has lessened my suffering is that I now realize that this isn't my fault, although it becomes my problem. One of the reasons that I choose to pursue a life of social justice work is that nothing makes me feel better than knowing that I am doing what I can to fight this and make some kind of difference, whether it's in the lives of individuals or in society at large. I deserve better, and so does everyone else. And I, and lots of others, are fighting for it, and we're going to win. But to be clear, we shouldn't have to. Nobody should have to fight to be treated with basic human respect. And that's what I find so sad. All of this suffering of obese people could end right this second, and nobody needs to lose a pound. Society just needs to stop trying to shame, stigmatize, humiliate, and hate people healthy. We can work on access to healthy foods. We can work on access to safe movement options that people enjoy. We can work on making sure that people have access to appropriate evidence-based healthcare. If we give up being a horribly failed example for making people thin, we could be a successful example for health. End quote. That may just be my favorite thing that Regan Chastain has ever written. And that's saying a lot because I love everything that she does. You should really go check out her blog, Dances with Fat. She's got a lot of really great stuff on there, and the work she is doing is so incredibly important. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Friend of Marilyn. Friend of Marilyn airs weekly on Access Manitou 999 AM and is also podcast on iTunes. You can contact the show by emailing friendofmarilyn@aol.com. You should also go like our Facebook page. Closing the show is the Mamas and the Papas with Dedicated to the One I Love. What?